As we announced last week, we've reached a time where we have been in the life of Christ for about 6 months, so we want to pursue a book study for about that same period of time. Some people prefer a book study. Some people prefer a textual study. And this one is a little different than previous book studies. This one is learning about Jesus. As you look at the foreword, a couple of quick points here. The author points out that Jesus was the greatest teacher of all time, and that is true. We can have some great, some wonderful, some magnificent teachers in life, but the Lord beats them all. When we look at Jesus' knowledge, his work, his love, his teachings, his sacrifice, they are truly unsurpassed, and he was the master teacher. When we look at the Lord, we find that he was kind, he was compassionate, but at the same time, he balanced those qualities with firmness, and he had an exacting nature. He also was a teacher that was someone people could approach. He welcomed people, as we see from verses like Matthew 11, verse 29. So we want to do our best to learn from Jesus, and as with some other class books, this one is going to be based on the King James translation. So if you use some other translations to fill in the blank as you study through the material, that's okay. But realize that some of the blanks may not line up as well with some other translations as they would with the King James. Let's turn over to page 5, thinking about a good foundation. And that's what we want to start with tonight. We'll not, I think, get through the entire lesson, but hopefully about 50% of it can be completed this evening. He says, every building, if it's going to last, if it's going to endure, what does the building need? There's got to be a good foundation. That's where it starts. If you have a house built, they're going to start with a foundation. You're going to have the excavator come out, and she's going to put in the right foundation. And when you think about a foundation, is the foundation for a house going to be the same as the foundation for a skyscraper? No. What's going to be the basic difference? All right, you're going to have one that's deeper, and you're going to have one that's bigger if it's a skyscraper foundation, in contrast to probably what you're going to have for a retirement home. When we see some of the buildings that exist, we can be impressed. We've got the great skyscrapers, tons of concrete, a lot of steel goes into those things because there is, as the author rightly says, there's a lot of weight to support. We know sometimes because someone has had a bad experience, or because of what we've read, what we've seen, that if the foundation is weak, what's going to be true for the rest of the structure? It's going to be weak. Now, we've probably had that experience with the game. This time of year, sometimes there are some gatherings, people, friends, family, whatever it might be, they get together, and they have games like building blocks. And if you start off with a bad foundation, I think we've all done that, maybe when we were a small child, and we had some blocks that weren't lined up quite right, we could build up a little ways, but before long it topples. And the better the foundation with those blocks or games that require a foundation, the higher we can go. The longer a building is going to last, the more it can endure as far as people trying to add to it and not destroy it. He says then, when we think about great structures, one of which would be the Great Wall of China, the pyramids, the Greek Parthenon, and so forth, we've got structures which last. It is impressive as you go back and you look, for example, at the Parthenon, that's literally thousands of years old. And yet you still have that building surviving. And it's just amazing. But it was founded by people. Individuals understood some basic principles of design, engineering, building, and they lasted. Well, if the Bible presents God as a builder, and it does, we see that in a lot of different ways. In fact, throughout the scriptures, you have God pictured as a builder, don't you? Where do you find God pictured as a builder? Well, how about we start very early in the Bible? All right, we think about, what did he build?
Everything.
Well, he built everything. He's the heavens, the earth, man, the rivers, the trees. He was the master builder, so to speak. And if something is going to be built by God, what do you suspect about the foundation? It's going to be pretty solid. Have men done some damage to the earth? Yeah. Now, not everybody agrees on how much damage. Some think that there's damage here when there may or may not be and so forth. But man has done some damage to the planet. Yet God's foundation was so powerful that what's been true since the inception of the earth? It's still here. And we can still live here. It has not become an inhospitable environment. People are not dying off because it's gotten too hot, too cold, or too something else. So when we think about God from the physical realm, he has proven that he is a great, great designer. Then the second paragraph. He said, when we think about man, we do not know exactly what the first building or the first structure looked like. But it certainly would not have been like the kinds of structures that we see today. But it did require some thought. It did require some planning. Anybody ever build a little shelter out in the woods? something like a lean-to? Anybody ever done that? Okay, a few of us have. And maybe the first time you did that, it didn't go so well. Got a little bit of a wind and bang, down comes one of the support beams. Or bang, down comes the thatched roof, whatever it was. So that can happen, but typically people get a little bit better as they build, and that certainly has been true even in recent times. We've seen within, I think it's been the last 20 years, some of the storms in Florida came through, and the houses were not built up to the specs that they needed to be, so they changed the specs. Now, not necessarily in the foundation, but as far as some of the roofing and some of the other matters, they wanted to make sure that it could withstand that same type of storm, were that to ever occur again. Let's pick up some passages here. We'll get three helpers lined up. The first is going to come from the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 4, verse 17. Who'd like to be heading back there? All right. I think I had about three hands. Okay. Freddie, good to have you with us tonight. Let's turn you back to Genesis 4, 17. Genesis 7, 5 is next. Brian. And then number three will come from the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 5. Hebrews 8, 5. All right, Steve. Let's get one more lined up. He didn't list this as a reference, but I'd like to go back to 1 Kings chapter 5, and we'll look at verses 13 through 17. 1 Kings chapter 5, Steve, thank you. 1 Kings 5, 13 to 17. We return, though, first of all, to Genesis chapter 4, verse 17. Very good, thank you. The first thing mentioned in the Bible, as far as something being built, is this city. And what was the name of the city?
Enoch.
It was named Enoch, Genesis chapter 4, verse 17. Kind of interesting that they actually named the city, just like today. We name the streets in a neighborhood, we name a city, we name a state, and so forth. He mentions, too, after that reference, it's highly unlikely that a city was the first thing ever built, and I think that's probably true. To have a city, generally, what do you need to have? Well, okay, you're going to have some people before you have a city. And the people are probably going to live where? In some kind of house. So likely you have some preliminary building projects. But there was the idea that we can put a lot of people in this area, and it is going to be a community. It will be like a city. And they could have built some other items as well. We know from Genesis chapter 4 that Cain and Abel were involved with worship. So building some kind of altar or maybe some tools, those kinds of things. Certainly, it would make sense that those items came along before a city. Anything that you want to address before we move forward a little bit more? All right. Moving down just a little bit, he says in the next paragraph, way back in your early Sunday school days, you probably learned that Noah built something. What did Noah build?
Ark.
Well, thankfully, we all got that. Moses, what did he build?
Tabernacle.
Okay, we should be two for two here. And then Solomon, he comes along, and he's also a builder. What does he build? He builds a temple. So, Ark, a big project or a little project? It was a massive undertaking. Tabernacle, when you look at it, there were a lot of things going on there. So, again, a pretty massive tabernacle project. And then the temple, also not a small project, especially when we get down to 1 Kings chapter 5. We have then the buildings, they were ordered by God, and they had to be built exactly as the Lord specified. Now, here's a practical point of application. If we start looking at the first part of the Bible, and God says to Noah, I want you to build an ark. God doesn't say, I just want you to build an ark, you figure it out. You go to engineering school, that didn't exist, but you figure out what's going to work. God didn't do that. What did God do with the ark? He said, here are the dimensions. Here's the wood. Here's what you do when it comes to a window. God gave him the basic instructions that he needed. And when we consider that, how can we sum it up? God gave Noah a pattern. There was a specific design. And Noah had one of two choices. He could be fully obedient to the pattern. He could be partially obedient to the pattern. Or he could be completely disobedient to the pattern. So that's very early in the Bible. We may move forward a little bit. A different era now. Moses comes along. God has his people, the chosen people. They are out of Egyptian bondage, and now it's time to have a specific system of religion, the law of Moses, the Mosaic system. And God says to Moses, you find this in the book of Hebrews as well, I want you to build this tabernacle according to the pattern, the same idea that Noah was given. And then God moves forward a little bit further, and now his people have been out of Egyptian bondage for a while. You've got three kings for the United Kingdom, serving 40 years apiece. Who was the first one? Saul. Number two was David. Number three was Solomon. And when it's time for Solomon to build the temple, God said, I've got what for you? I've got a pattern. If God said there was a pattern for the ark, there was a pattern for the tabernacle, and there was a pattern for the temple, all those things were going to be transitory. That is, they were not going to be permanent. Then when we get to the New Testament and we read about the church, what was the purchase price for the church? The blood of Christ. The blood of Jesus, the Son of God, deity in the flesh. Would you expect, based on what we just picked up from the Old Testament, that there would be a pattern for the church, or God would just say, do whatever you want. I'm not that choosy about the blood of my Son. It would make perfect sense. And even in Romans 15:4, Paul said, the things we learn from the Old Testament, they're written for our learning. We should be able to learn. We should be able to deduce that God was going to expect a pattern for the church. And that is exactly right. Now, going back to that first pattern that we referenced from the book of Genesis, Noah, let's see what we have in Genesis chapter 7, verse 5.
And Noah did according unto all that the Lord commanded him.
Let's fill in our blank. Noah did how much? He did all that the Lord commanded. And then we'll pick up with the third reference. This comes from the book of Hebrews, chapter 8, verse 5.
Who stood the copy and shadow of the heavenly things? As Moses was divinely instructed, he was about to make the tabernacle, where he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown to you.
Okay. Here you have our New Testament reference to what Moses was involved with as far as the items related to the tabernacle. And the Hebrew writer says it had to be made according to the pattern. Do you think there are people sometimes when they look at a project or maybe they look at a pattern and they think, you know, that's going to be a lot of work. So rather than follow the pattern, we're going to take some shortcuts. Think anybody does that? Yeah? You buy something from eBay that's about 70% off compared to what the retail would be? 9 times out of 10... what's that product going to be when you get it home? Not going to come from the U.S. manufacturer. It's coming from where? Coming from China. It's a knockoff. There's a lot of that stuff. China has tried to imitate a lot of our things. And it might look similar, but at the end of the day, what's true about the pattern? Yes, it's a knockoff. It's an imitation. They did not follow the pattern. And we see that as far as how the product is made, or the quality of the product, or the duration, the life time of the product. Now let's take a look here at a passage which he references but doesn't give us the text. The stones, he says, used in one of the buildings built by Solomon were great. They were costly stones. They were hewn to the exact dimensions before being brought to the building site. 1 Kings chapter 5, starting with verse 13 and reading down through 17.
And King Solomon raised a levy out of all Israel, and the levy was 30,000 men. And he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month. Horses. A month they were in Lebanon, and 2 months at home, and Adoniram was over the men subject to task work. And Solomon had 70,000 that bare burdens, and 80,000 that were hewers in the mountains. Besides Solomon's chief officers, there were over the work 3,300 who ruled over the people that wrought in the work. And the king commanded, and they hewed out great stones, costly stones, to lay the foundation of the house with the wrought stone. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders and the Gebalites did fashion them and prepared the timber and the stones to build the house.
Great job. I know there were some tough names in there. Tens of thousands of people. Now, if you're king, that's probably going to be a whole lot easier than if you're not king. But tens of thousands of people were used to get this project done. God had given him a pattern, also gave him the resources to use it, and Solomon didn't hold back. He did what God required. Lesson for us is, we're not dealing with some kind of physical house or structure when it comes to the church that's going to be eliminated after a period of years. This has eternal value. So when we think about following the pattern, it's not anything to try to go cheap on or try to somehow reduce, but it needs to be followed in every possible way. This kind of brings us to the end of the thought as far as what we've been looking at. Anything that you'd like to add or ask before we move into the next section? Okay. Let's head somebody over to Matthew chapter 7. We'll ask you to read verses 24 to 28 in just a minute. Matthew 7, 24 to 28. Gary, thank you. And then we'll be heading over to page 6, looking at Luke chapter 6, verse 48. Who wants to get lined up for that? Luke 6, verse 48. Steve? And then we'll also head down to the book of Psalms, Psalm 127, verse 1. Who wants to be ready for that? Psalm 127, verse 1. Bonnie, thank you. Let's begin with Matthew 7, towards the end of the Sermon on the Mount. This should take us right to the end. Starting with verse 24, reading down through verse 28.
Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon the house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine.
Thank you. Jesus ends the Sermon on the Mount by using construction language or imagery, talking about the wise man and the foolish man. The author asks this question in our study. Who is the wise man? Based on Matthew 7, verses 24 to 28. Who is the smart man, the shrewd man, the fellow who makes the right decisions? Two things are true about him. Number one,
he hears.
And number two, he also does, or he is obedient. Both of those answers would be correct. So when we think about a good foundation, someone is willing to hear what's right, hear the truth, and then act on the truth. Well, we would expect that from a builder if we were having a business built or a house built or something else that needed a foundation. The guy needs to have the right information, and then he needs to do what's right. We don't want any shortcuts. We don't want him doing something that's going to cost us a little bit later down the line. Now, when you think about our society, trying to take what Jesus talked about in Matthew 7 and in view of tonight's material, when you think about this, do you find that in our society we have a problem when it comes to foundations? We do. What are people hearing? And what are they doing? Well, let's make it a little more specific. What about our young people? Where are they getting their foundations from? Well, I got two answers at once. I think Gary may have been just a smidgen ahead of you, Doug. But
broken homes.
All right, broken homes. If you found a home on brokenness, what would you expect? As that home is built up and up and up, you're going to very possibly create a series of events which are all related to brokenness. Good generally doesn't flow out of bad. It just doesn't work that way, typically. But that's what society expects. Doug, what was your answer? Okay, there's a corruption of the mind, and that can take a lot of different forms. It could be from what they get as far as the home life, it could be what they're taught in school, could be what they are taught in a religious place. We've seen that with some religion. It gives people a very bad foundation, and the house is really shaky later on. In fact, it's a dangerous house. Some other ideas that come from secular news sources, kids are influenced in various ways. It's a problem. The world talks about, and I think you see this with society. I can remember several years ago, and I don't have any way of following it up now, but I remember that a local congregation in Jamaica had the opportunity to take over an orphanage that the state had abandoned. The kids were about as filthy and bad, and part of it was behavior, but I mean bad as far as malnourished and all the problems that children could have. It was like they were all lumped together in this orphanage. But there was a small congregation of about 30, 40, maybe 50 people at most. They decided that they were going to go in there and make that their work. It was their country, their area, and they went into that orphanage, and little by little, they started cleaning up the kids. Kids got food. The kids were cared for. The kids were loved and shown good things. And their hope was, with those kids, that the time would come when they would be adults and that there would be a good foundation from which that part of Jamaica could start to benefit, including the church. And they recognize, I think, one of the most fundamental qualities when it comes to foundations. If you're dealing with somebody who's 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, can they be taught? Sure. Can they be converted? Yeah. But as you're converting somebody who's 75 years old, what are you trying to do after the conversion process? You're trying to go back into their life, and what part of the life are you trying to really start to work on? The foundation. It's not impossible, but it is very difficult to go back. It'd be a whole lot easier if you could catch somebody when they were 2 or 5, wouldn't it? You're working on the foundation in those earlier years. And that's something that we can do with kids. Had a little time to spend with Lee today. We went outside for a little bit, built a snowman. And after we got through with that, we walked over by the lake and the river for a little while and let him look around a little bit. And then I pointed to some things. I said, look, the trees there. Who made the trees? God. Who made the rocks? God. Can't see the fish right now. They've kind of gone to a special spot. But fish swim in the pond. Who made the fish? God. And little by little, we can start to sow the seeds in those young minds and help create a foundation for the next generation. And if we fail to do that, do you think somebody else is going to want to sow the seeds and create a foundation in those little minds and lives? Absolutely. Devil, as well as some secular sources.
With what you're saying, you hear it all the time, with the court systems and everything, they're saying we need to get the kids before they get to the stage.
Yes.
What's wrong? Even they see that there's problems a lot more in this country than there used to be.
Yeah. And when you look at some of the schools, homosexuality is something. There was an article that came out the other day that they're teaching kindergartners. You know, that you know, no longer mom and dad. You can have 2 moms, 2 dads. The world understands that principle a whole lot better than some congregations do sometimes. And that's bad. But that would be another example where Jesus said, the sons of this world are wiser, smarter than the children of light. So sometimes we just have to wake up because this should be our strategy. And it's certainly a Bible strategy, but we've let the world grab it from us, take it, and run with it.
Something was 2 miles. That was just the name, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This subtle, like,
yeah,
like that's not, you know. There wasn't 2 pictures of 2 women on the mm-hmm. baggage or anything, but it, and I couldn't help but think that that's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that we'll ever see this or
and
not.
I might read too much into it. Maybe it's just 2 mothers that went into business, but.
In today's society, that seems pretty slight as far as the chance of that. But you think, you know, kids get cereal. Do you think the cereal manufacturer is trying to market a message on the box? Yeah. Now, it might be marketing a toy. It might not be marketing a moral issue. But you do find those kinds of things because they realize that you form those young minds. And those minds are going to harden with time. And once that mind has been hardened, it's very, very difficult to go back and start chiseling out the old foundation and replacing it with what's right. But that is our job if that's where we encounter somebody. All right, a couple of the points here. Let's look at the bottom of page 5. What 3 things beat upon the house?
Rain,
floods, and wind. Now, this might be reading too much into that, but let me make this observation. When you think of rain, what direction would we, I think, probably associate with rain? All right, I think top down. Rain is coming down. What direction would we typically associate with floods? I think so. We got one down, we got one up. And again, I know that wind can vary a little bit, but generally when we think about wind, what direction probably first comes to mind? Sideways. So I think that's kind of interesting as Jesus talks about the house being founded on a rock. You have here an image possibly of items coming down, items coming up, and items hitting it from side to side. So that house is going to be shaken and shaken a lot. So it is absolutely necessary that there be a good foundation for it. And that's what we want when it comes to founding lives. Top of page 6, question 3. Why did the wise man's house not fall? It had a good foundation. It was founded on the rock. Now let me point out something you may not have noticed before. When you look at that word rock, what word do you have before it? Founded on a rock. Who has a rock? No, founded on a rock. Who has a Bible translation that reads a rock? Not too many. How many has a translation that reads something else? Anybody have a translation that says founded on the rock? Okay, now if you never thought about that distinction before, give careful consideration to it. Would you say that it is possible to found in the spiritual realm? Would you say that it's possible to found a spiritual life on a rock? Is it possible to found a religious life on a rock?
No, it's got to be on the rock.
You couldn't have a religious foundation on a rock? What about Islam? Is Islam a rock?
Lots of different kinds of rocks.
Yes, and that's the point. There are a lot of different kinds of rocks that you can have. And when you look at somebody who is in a religious group that is a system that's been around for a while, that is their rock. That is their faith. When you look at people in the denominational realm, do they not seem to have a rock that they cling to? They get a lot of confidence. They die in hope, at least in their mind. But as Gary rightly said, there is a difference between a rock, which might in many ways seem to be a pretty good foundation, and the rock. In the Greek text, there's a definite article. So when Jesus talks about the foundation, his point is, you need to be founded not just on a rock, not something that may work for you through life, but you need to be founded on the rock. Haven't we already seen that? Moses was to build according to the pattern. Noah was to build according to the pattern. Solomon was to build according to the pattern. The pattern is another way of describing the rock. So when you see a person coming along and they say, well, I'm happy with my life. I feel like everything is secure. They may feel that way because they have a rock. But a rock is not good enough.
Yeah, it's just we're talking about a pattern. If you want to sew a dress, you have a pattern. But you can't just go and pick out any pattern. You might end up with your pants.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, there are a lot of patterns. But just because you have a pattern doesn't mean that you're going to get to the place where you need to be. You've got to have the right one. You've got to be on the right road. And that's perhaps why Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount talked about the narrow way. A lot of ways. Very good. Anything you want to add or ask on that point? Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Brad.
Yeah.
Also be referring to the rock when you talk about Peter on this rock, this confession. Is that...
Yes, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. The church was going to be built on him. Yes. Excuse me. You have the same basic idea there as well, that you've got a lot of religious figures. Muhammad would be one. You've got Mary Baker Eddy, as far as someone who's in fairly modern times, and Joseph Smith, a lot of different people. But Jesus says, this is the rock, me. Let's pick up with point four. What was the foundation for the foolish man? Sand. May have looked pretty, may have been cheap, but it was not going to be a suitable foundation. Point five, what word is used to describe the fall of the foolish man's house? It was great. Okay, Luke 6, verse 48. Let's have that read now, please.
He is like a man building a house, who dug deep and laid the foundation of the rock. And when the flood arose, the rock came tumbling against the house, and could not shake it, for it was founded upon the rock.
Okay, let's fill in our blanks. Luke gives basically the same comparison when it comes to builders. He says the hearer and the doer, they would be like a man who dug deeply, laid the foundation on a rock, and when he built his house, the flood came, it could not be shaken. As we look at the next verse, the hearer only is like a man who lacks a foundation. In fact, it's like his house is built where? Just on the earth. You know, like putting up a shack without a foundation. And he says the house fell and the ruin was great. I like that word ruin. Because here is a word which applies not only to secular construction, but what about the life of an individual? Now, it's not true in every case. There have been some people who have received a great foundation in life and they've ruined their life. But I believe it's also the case when you look at many who have gone down some very difficult roads and gotten into various forms of trouble. You may even hear from the individual, here was my upbringing, this is what my parents did, or I was an abandoned child, or I grew up in a drug-infested home, or there was this, there was that, and that foundation was poor. And that life, as it continued on that poor foundation, it just got worse and worse and really got out of control. Anything that went out or asked before we look at Psalm 127? Let's look at that first verse now, Psalm 127, verse 1. Didn't we have somebody lined up for that?
What was that?
Psalm 127, verse 1.
Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it.
Okay, thank you. That's good.
Okay,
he mentions here, when we think about the importance of a good material foundation, that's certainly true in the secular realm, but it's also true in the spiritual realm. We've got to hear and do, as we saw from Matthew 7, verses 24 through 28, and when we do that, we're going to be in good shape. But if we don't do that, then that house is built, like we've been discussing, and the Bible says the labor, the work, the effort that was put in to that structure, it's all in vain. They labor in vain. In Ephesians 2, verse 20, Paul said, Christians have a firm foundation. He says in 2:20, and are built upon the foundation of, anybody know what the next couple words are? Built on the, okay, on the apostles. Christ is the rock, but the apostles were also part of that foundation. And then who would likely follow the apostles in your mind? All right, we've got the prophets. They're tied in too. Christ Jesus himself being the chief cornerstone. So you've got a nice foundation there. Matthew 21, verse 42. Once again, we should be familiar enough with this verse to fill it in. Did you never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner? And that's what Jesus is. He is that chief cornerstone. He is the one that everything revolves around. He is really the centerpiece, so to speak. And then let's move down a little bit more. You have in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10, should be familiar with this too. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereon, talking about the church. Of course, he says, how many, what foundations? For other foundation, there can be no other foundation. For other foundation can no man lay than that which is Jesus Christ. Well, what would that passage tell us? What can we infer from that verse about denominational groups? When you see a religious group, we were founded in 1852 by fill in the name. What does that tell you about that group? Immediately. You're founded on perhaps a rock. We might admit that. But you're not founded on the rock. And because you're not founded on the rock, that's a problem. You will be, as Jesus described in Matthew chapter 15, verses 11 through 13, rooted up by God because God did not plant the group. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Here Paul mentioned two evil men. He said that they'd erred from the truth. They'd overthrown the faith of some brethren. They said the resurrection was already past, like we talked about from the 70 AD study. But then he added, nevertheless, the foundation of God stands sure. Hasn't that proven to be true? You think Christianity has been challenged and tested and beaten up on over the years? It has been in a lot of different ways. God's servants have been killed. His servants have been persecuted. People have tried to burn copies of the Bible. Event after event has unfolded as far as Christianity is concerned. And yet that foundation of God, the rain has come down, the floods have come up, the winds have hit it from side to side, and at the end of the day, it is still as strong as it ever was. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to respond to it, but the foundation is secure. Then just before we get down to pride, he says, today, too many are building the houses on bad foundations which cannot stand the test of time. So we've outlined this in a general way, so we now want to take the balance of our time tonight and think about some poor foundations. How can a person found their life on some items which will eventually fail them? The first item, and he has several passages here, I'm going to eliminate number 10 as well as number 8 on page 7. But let's, aside from points or passages that are listed in points 8 and 10, we'll look at the other verses. So if you want to move ahead a little bit, let's maybe get 5 lined up at a time. Psalm 10, verse 2, and then we'll also ask you to read verse 4 of Psalm 10. Psalm 10, who wants? Okay, Bonnie's Psalm 10. Psalm 119, 69. 119, Gary. Then we'll take a look at Proverbs 6. I'll ask you to include one verse, Proverbs 6, verses 16 and 17. Proverbs 6. All right, Steve, 16 and 17. Proverbs 13, 10. Tracy, and then Lois, let's ask you to take Proverbs 16, 18. Thank you. Let's go back to Psalm 10, starting with verse 2. What do you think it means to persecute the poor? What would be an example of that? Persecuting the poor.
Not being welcoming or receiving them.
All right. I would say that would certainly qualify. When we're dealing with somebody who's having a difficult time, you might have mocking in there, or they're not willing to be, they're not received in a good way. Those would certainly qualify. If you've taught a child that, what would you expect as far as the foundation leading to later in that child's life? All right. Yeah. Not going to treat other people well, especially people who are quote-unquote beneath them of a different economic level or basis. And they got that probably from childhood. And then, if you will, two verses later, Psalm 10, verse 4.
The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts.
Okay, here's a proud person. And because of that pride, the individual does not seek God. Once again, thinking about this, if a child grows up in a home, and this is not going to be true, absolutely, but if a child grows up in a home, and the child is taught, we're from a good, powerful, influential, wealthy family, and you're so smart, you're so talented, you're so this, that, and the other thing, we don't need God. What kind of foundation have you given to that child? You've given that child a godless, and I would even say an anti-God foundation. Do you think that's going to be hard to undo later in life? You can start breaking out the concrete, but you have cemented that child's foundation as far as an anti-God attitude. And that is a very, very serious matter. Remember the old proverb, train up a child in the way he should go. And a couple different understandings of that passage, but Solomon recognized that you're bending the tree one way or the other. And if you bend it against God, don't expect to have a child who serves, honors, and loves God because you've directed the child in the wrong way. Psalm 119, 69.
Read that verse there, reminds you of Ted Turner.
Yes.
Only the weak need God.
Yeah. Communism said that as well. It was a little different version of by the Russians and others. But religion is opium. So, strong people don't need the drug. But weak people do. So there have been different versions of that, but you're exactly right. And that's drilled into the minds of people, makes it very, very difficult for them to right the ship later in life. Psalm 119:69.
The proud have forged a lie against me, but I will keep thy precepts with my whole heart.
Okay. What do you think people learn to lie, or learn to lie about others? You think one day they just wake up at the age of 35 and, I'm going to start lying about people? That's generally not the way it works. Usually that is a habit, it's a pattern that's formed. And if you talk to parents who have children who struggle with lying or who are habitual liars, you'll probably see that that can be traced back through a period of many years. It wasn't stopped. But there are some people who do like to lie about others, and in many cases that can go back to a poor foundation. Proverbs 6, 16 and 17. Based on the verses just read, those two verses from Proverbs chapter 6, do you think it is possible for a parent to give a foundation to a child that God hates? It is. And that's scary, that we can give to a child a foundation that is filled with a number of things that God hates. And we as parents, grandparents, whoever we might be, that is something that we never want to do. 13:10, same book, Proverbs. Okay, still trying to connect this with pride, but he talks about conflict. Do you believe that there are some parents who give conflict as a big part of a child's foundation? Not treated well at school? What's dad say? Beat him up. Put him in the hospital. Get out the tire iron. Smack him around a while. I knew some parents like that growing up. Now, ideally, that will be dealt with in a good Christian way, but there are some parents who give their children a foundation of violence, and that can be related to pride, as the writer says in Proverbs 13:10. Let's take a look at 16, verse 18. Once again, here's something else that can be part of a child's makeup. Haughtiness. What's haughtiness? Okay, pride would be one definition for it. If we try to make that a little more practical, what would we say? I like that a little bit more. We've all seen an arrogant person. We can maybe better understand that word than haughtiness. Do you think it's possible to give a child a foundation of arrogance? Absolutely. And that's going to be very difficult for that child to get along well in the world, if that's the way that he or she is trained. All right, let's take a look. Same book, Proverbs. See if we can squeeze in 29:23. Then we'll look at 1 John 2:16, Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 32. Proverbs 29, verse 23. Who wants it? 29:23? Steve? Then 1 John 2:16. Who wants to be responsible for that? Gary, 2:16, 1 John. And then Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 32. Jeremiah 50:32. Brian, thanks. All right, Proverbs 29:23. Okay. All right. Well, let's just take 1 John 2:16 for a minute, and we'll come back to it.
For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world.
Okay. Now, you think about that. John lists three things here. What are they? Number one? Lust of the flesh? Lust of the eyes? Pride of life. Do you see how if a child is trained, or maybe even teenage years, early married years maybe, if somebody has that in their foundation, can you see how that can bring out some problems in life? What about the lust of the flesh? Whatever you desire, you need to go get. Don't hold anything back from yourself. If a person has been reared with that mentality, what might be some of the potential consequences? All right, sure. They're doing it. It's fun. You might have multiple divorces and remarriages. You know, I like her better than her, the current wife, so I'm going to go out there and switch my space or switch my mate out for another person that I like. So yes, it matters. Proverbs 29:23. Let's go back there now.
A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold him, humble in spirit.
Okay. Solomon warns, pride, that haughtiness, it's going to bring you low. So if we give our kids the wrong foundation, do you think that we can hurt them badly in later years? We can. We can instill in them the wrong values, and there can be some severe consequences for that. Then finally, Brian, Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 32.
And the most proud shall stumble and fall, and none shall raise him up, but I'll kindle a fire in his cities, and shall devour all around him.
Okay. Imagine giving a child a foundation where in the later years they don't just stumble, but Jeremiah 50, verse 32, their life is completely destroyed. Maybe they kill themselves. Maybe they become so involved with some kind of addiction that they just can't turn it around. Foundations matter. And that's why Jesus, I think, hit that so hard in the final verses of Matthew chapter 7 when he closed out that sermon. Next paragraph, and let's see how far we can get. If God resists the proud, as Peter did, as Peter said, he would surely reject those who build their houses upon a proud spirit. Didn't work too well for a couple of Old Testament characters, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, as we see from the book of Daniel. So we have pride, a lot of different things associated with that as far as a bad foundation, but you also have unbelief. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 17 through 19, the Hebrew writer said, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not, that is, they disobeyed. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. They didn't allow themselves to have the right foundation. It got corrupted along the way, and they paid the price. Hebrews 4, verse 11. Let us labor, therefore, to enter into that rest, lest any fall after the same example of unbelief. Jude, when we think about that little book, verse 5, he says, there were some people, God delivered them out of the land of Egypt. Afterward, he destroyed those who believed not. So, foundations, it can become perverted, it can become twisted, or if it's not good, it can have consequences in this life as well as eternity. Skipping the next short paragraph, he says, unbelief is not ignorance. It's hearing and not doing. Do you think that we can also instill this in the foundation of a person's life? That we can hear but not do, and kids will pick that up? Yes. So whether it's related to the church, whether it's related to marriage, school, wherever it might be. We have Jesus' words, Matthew chapter 7, verse 26. We looked at that earlier. As far as hearing the sayings, the person who decides to not do them. You have also Matthew chapter 13, verses 54 through 58, how some people responded to his teachings. They were astonished. They marveled at his wisdom. They were impressed by his works. And yet they still wanted to think of him as a carpenter's son. Verse 57 says they were offended in him. Verse 58, he could not do any mighty works there. That would be in his own country because of unbelief. And they were not willing to have that good foundation, and it was to their downfall. Jesus in Matthew chapter 23, in talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, warned the Jewish people, God had wanted to gather you as a hen would gather the chickens under her wings, ye would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Jesus offered the Jewish people a solid foundation. And yet they said, we don't want you. We're satisfied with the foundation that we have, our traditions, the law of Moses, and we're good to go.